Coming up on Chasing the Natty, spring games have come to a close, and as much as we tried to cover them all, there simply wasn't enough time in previous episodes to touch on them all. Until now. Today, I'll be running through the remaining screen games with you and give you the rundown on what happened and what you can take away that could potentially impact your college fantasy leagues this year. We've got all that and more coming right after this.
Chinty go, breaks a tackle, he's 10, he's touchdown!
Burton's going to throw the deep ball, and Burton cut the defense, touchdown Luther Burton!
Milrow going to run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milrow, goodbye, touchdown Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this whatever morning. I guess you're not even really riding to your work. It's probably going to get released on Saturday. So, well, good job, Jared. Starting off strong here. Regardless of where you are listening to this, I hope you're having a wonderful day. And the other true thing is that we are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can always find us on your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off-season at 6 a.m. usually. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campuscant.com and subscribe there to any of our fabulous tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devi, C2C leagues, college IDP, college DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content that includes tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I am at CFF underscore Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty. No handsome fellow across from me today, as I am recording this off schedule from when we normally do this, because I owe you guys all out there an apology, because I've been talking about recording this show for really the last 2 weeks, and just unfortunately, life just kind of kept getting in the way. And I'll admit, the one night that I probably did have time to sit down and fully record this, I was just so burnt out that like I just needed to take the night. And then life got crazy again, so I had to even wait even longer. But we're here. We're finally here. We got a ton of teams to talk about here today. As you guys have been hearing over the last couple of weeks with CTN episodes, we've had a bunch of content to cover. We got transfer portal news, some of the bigger spring games we've already touched on. In pretty much every episode, I was talking about how there were teams that we couldn't quite get to there that had some kind of smaller takeaways that we just didn't have time to get to. But that is what we're going to touch on here today. We're not going to touch on any of the remaining spring portal news. There's some players I could talk about again, like Jacoby Criswell going back to North Carolina, Penny Boone switching from he was going to go to Kentucky, now is at UCF, Marcus Cooper at San Diego State. Could talk about all those guys. That'll be on next week's CTN episode when we get back to our regular schedule. But for here and now, we are going to touch on these spring games. And we, like I said, I got a ton of them here. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4. We got almost 20 teams to touch on here. So really, I better quit yapping. I say we kind of get right on into this. Let's go. Again, a couple quick announcements. Again, you guys know pretty much the gist at this point. One, if you haven't checked out the latest episode of Defending the Natty, we touch on the freshman for this upcoming year, Instant Impact Sashes Phase. Next month, Nate and I will be discussing the supplemental players. That's definitely going to be a fun one, because that's always an interesting topic every single year, considering how much supplemental players vary from league to league. But they do matter, so we'll definitely be talking about that this month. And then really the other main announcement that I have is that last week I goofed. I told you guys that the Campus Canton Devi Guide will be coming out May 1st. I was incorrect. It's actually coming out May 6th, this upcoming Monday. Again, standard $20 fee for those of you who are outside membership. If you are a member, if you have one of our scholarship tiers, this could be your one free guide for the year. And if you're part of our NIL yearly tier, you can get this guide for free along with all of the other ones. So go check that out if it interests you. For now, I'm pretty much ready to get right on into these spring games. So if you're watching this on YouTube, again, I'm going to throw up some graphics. Again, we're going to take it one by one, but, you know, I'm going to take it really conference by conference, because as I kind of noted at the top of the show, the bigger spring games, the ones that kind of has some more newsworthy items, some almost direct impacts on some CFF news, we've covered those already. If you get through this episode and you realize, like, oh, he didn't really touch on the team I wanted to, like, maybe you wanted to hear about the Oregon Ducks, or you're sitting here wondering, like, whoa, he hit the Mountain West, but man, where's Utah State? I wanted to hear about those guys. Go check out the last, like, 4 weeks of CTN episodes, and you can probably find in those the team that you are looking for. So again, we'll start with the SEC. We'll kind of run through the power conferences first, and then we'll get to the group of five teams here at the very end. And we'll start with Texas A&M and South Carolina. Those are the only two SEC teams that we have not really covered up until this point, because the SEC got a lot of their spring games out of the way pretty early this year. So we'll talk about Texas A&M here first. And really, I think the main thing I think that was the takeaway for me were two things. One, coming out of the running back room, I feel like I was watching a different game than some of the beat writers. So TexasFootball.com's main takeaway, one of his main takeaways that he listed out in their article was that Le'Veon Moss looked like the workhorse running back. He carried the ball 13 times in this game, seven more than any other player. Moss ended the day with 13 carries, 69 yards, and a touchdown. So a pretty solid day. Clearly, he was working pretty well. I watched a good chunk of this game, and guys, like, again, as they kind of mentioned, he didn't get as much run as Le'Veon Moss, but man, Ruben Owens looks like he's really kind of a step above the rest of these guys. He ripped off multiple 20-plus yard runs in this game, including a 61-yard score. I personally think that in a crowded Aggie running back room, which this is a crowded Aggie running back room, again, Le'Veon Moss is there, Ruben Owens we know about, and then you got EJ Smith as well, who mostly ran with the second team. Again, the first team kind of rotated Owens and Moss in and out. If I have to bet on a Texas A&M running back this year, I'm probably going to be going with Ruben Owens, again, given Colin Klein's previous history at Kansas State. I really think that Owens fits the type of back that Klein has used in the past the most. And so, like, he's the one I'm going to take a couple shots on, probably at the end of some drafts right now. He's going as RB82 in a lot of drafts. If I'm not feeling comfortable at running back and I just need that upside swing betting on talent, I'm more than comfortable grabbing Ruben Owens there. A couple of the guys that really stood out for me here. Noah Thomas really made his case to be the Aggies' number one wide receiver here. He had 7 catches for 82 yards and 2 touchdowns. It does sound like that wide receiver will be a priority for the Aggies in the spring portal, but they've kind of whiffed on it so far, because Keandre Lambert-Smith was one of the big names that was supposedly ready to take his visit to Texas A&M. He took the visit, chose Auburn over them, and there's not really a ton of guys left over in the spring portal. Again, Sam Brown might have been another interesting one, but he is now in Miami. Again, more on that next week's episode. So if they can't get a guy that strikes me as, like, oh, he can be a 1B to Noah Thomas's 1A, I might need to take Noah Thomas a little bit more seriously in some of these drafts. A couple of other things, again, just on the QB competition, it really does seem like a three-way race right now. Connor Wiegman, the former five-star, still recovering from surgery, went 5-for-14 for 47 yards. Again, it is kind of important to note that those stat lines don't really look good, but Wiegman was drafted to the team with the lesser O-line and lesser receiver options. Texas A&M did, like, a draft where there were two captains they each picked, and apparently the captain that was not on Wiegman's team was really, really in on grabbing the starting O lineman and starting wide receivers first before anything else, while the other team grabbed a bunch of defense. So that really kind of left Wiegman out to dry. Meanwhile, Marcel Reed looked pretty good, 10-for-14, 84 yards and a touchdown. And Jalen Henderson, 8-for-13, 100 yards and a touchdown. I have seen Connor Wiegman people take shots on him, and I don't blame them because, again, former five-star quarterback, I get it. But I will say, let me see, where's Connor Weaven going? QB 42, I don't think... It's one of those things where I feel like I'm about to say something hot for the sake of saying something hot, but, I mean, Weaven is coming off of injury, and I think QB 42... Given the system that we have here, which is a good CFF system, don't get me wrong, but like Weigman, while he can run, is not exactly the type of quarterback that Colin Klein's been using in the past. That actually looks more like a guy like Jalen Henderson. I think QB 42 is a little bit too high for Weigman, given the fact that it does still seem like there's a legit competition here. Now, I think that if Weigman even sniffed the possibility of him losing out on this job, he probably would be in the portal right now, probably the top quarterback option out there right now, but he didn't leave, so I think he thinks that he still has a legit shot to win this job, so we'll see. That's my takeaways on A&M. South Carolina, a little bit less to go on here, but they say there's a competition between the Lenore Sellers and Robbie Ashford. This spring game pretty much put all that to rest. Lenore's looked great, 9 for 11, 70 yards, also rushed 5 times for 38 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, Robbie Ashford struggled mightily. The main thing also to take away from this game: offensive line is still an issue. One of the weakest in the country last year in the spring game. In the spring game, drew 5 penalties in the first half of the spring game. So clearly a lot to work with there. It does help that you got a guy like Lenore Sellers who can escape the pocket when he needs to. But if you're counting on this O-line to greatly improve and potentially create some CFF options for running back out of South Carolina instead of whatever mess that they had last year, I think you're going to be disappointed. So that's the only two SEC teams. Let's go ahead and move on to the Big Ten. All right. As you can see on the screen here, very much kind of the left, I don't want to say the leftovers because that sounds mean, but like these are teams we don't typically talk about too much for CFF. Again, you got Illinois, Maryland, Michigan State, UCLA, USC. A lot of these teams also didn't really have traditional spring games, so it makes it a little bit harder to talk about and get some takeaways from them, but we will certainly do our best. We'll start with Illinois. Offense apparently looked really, really good in this game, which is not typically something we see coming out for Illinois. Pat Bryant was healthy but barely played, so that tells me, again, that this is kind of a thing I've started noticing with a lot of teams, is that if a guy is healthy but is really, really important for your upcoming season, that he stays healthy, they don't play much, they get out of there. Pat Bryant easily falls under that category. Not a ton of stuff coming from the running backs, although I forget what year he is, but one of their young running backs, Aiden Lottery, 14 touches, 97 yards. Again, Caden Fagan, we still expect to be the lead back here. Josh McCray is still coming back from injury. He's expected to get some run as well. But if Aiden Lottery gets too good here, we might have a problem on our hands for those of us like me who've been drafting a lot of Caden Fagan here. They could go with a three-headed monster there. We will definitely see, although Fagan definitely proved that he could be the guy at times for Illinois last year. So who will see, or we will see. Who knows? That's all I got for Illinois. Let's move on to Maryland. Again, not really a ton to take away from here. None of the wide receivers really stood out. The main thing that the beat writers wanted to talk about was, as you would imagine with any team with a good quarterback competition, was the quarterback competition. According to many of the beat writers, but especially the Testudo Times here, quarterback competition between Billy Edwards, MJ Morris, and Cameron Edge, there wasn't any real clarity achieved here. All three of them combined for 18 passing yards in the first quarter. I mean, MJ Morris only attempted 2 passes in the first half, but he did lead the only touchdown drive of the game, so that's pretty important. He would, MJ Morris, that is, would go on to be named the most outstanding player of the spring, or at least of the spring game, not the spring overall. I feel like if it was the most outstanding player of the spring overall, he would have the job by now. But he did look solid. 6 for 8, 65 yards and a touchdown. Again, not a ton of throwing opportunities here. You want to look at the guy who did have the best day throwing, that would be Cameron Edge. Again, 11 for 25, 151 yards. Definitely the most yardage and production there, although obviously there's some serious accuracy issues there when he goes 11 for 25. But clearly this coaching staff wanted to get him a ton of reps there. So we will see how that shakes out. I'm still betting on MJ Morris to win this job eventually, but I'm really not convinced that Maryland's going to be all that good of a team this year, so we'll definitely see. One last little note I will say, if you're looking for some sleeper tight ends, Dylan Wade is a guy that I have my eye on right now. He caught two balls for 41 yards, scored the only touchdown, and according to the Testudo Times here, quote from them, he has the, quote, ability to fit into a hybrid role akin to Corey Dyches. Corey Dyches, if y'all remember, was a tight end 22 last year. With Maryland not really having a ton of receiving options, they still got guys like Caden Prather and stuff like that, but none of those guys were super impressive last year. Maybe they rely on a guy like Dylan Wade, who also, like Corey Dyches, is very undersized for a tight end, only 225 pounds. So very much fits into the role that they have of the tight end wide receiver hybrid they've been using the last couple of years. So if you want a sleeper tight end, there you go. Michigan State. First of all, I really appreciate Jonathan Smith for actually giving Michigan State a real spring game here rather than whatever the hell Mel Tucker was doing the last couple of years where you could just get nothing out of it. Aiden Childs, the greatly anticipated quarterback, a guy that a lot of us liked going into Oregon State last year, thought that he fits the Jonathan Smith system very, very well. He looked pretty solid, 7 for 14, 106 yards and a touchdown. You know, about 50% completion percentage. Nathan Carter looked really, really good. And his status as a workhorse in this offense should be pretty solidified as long as he stays healthy. He scored a 48-yard touchdown, the second play of the first series. They did bring in Kyrome Adams, the running back out of UMass. I really don't think that matters. I think that they were desperate for some depth there. Carter leaves after this year. Let Adams take over next year, potentially. I'm speaking out of my butt there a little bit. I'm not even sure if Adams has another year of eligibility. Regardless, I think Carter is your pretty clear top running back here. And given what we've seen out of Jonathan Smith's running backs the last couple of years, he's probably going a little too late in drafts right now. Again, his ADP, RB66, you can get him in the 16th round. Like, let's see, what other running backs are going off in that range? 16th round. What do we got here? Let's see, you got, okay, Corey Kiner's pretty solid, Marion Lukes. Again, it's that range where I think there's a lot of value of some of the running backs. Roman Hemby, Braylon McReynolds, Marquez Cooper, Darian Stewart, Jordan Waters. Yeah, I'm not going to lie, there's some value in that range right there. But I think Nathan Carter absolutely belongs in that tier as well. He's going behind guys, I mean, shoot, like Justin Marshall at Colorado State. I'll take Nathan Carter 100 times out of 100 over him. Mark Fletcher, I'd take Nathan Carter over him. Mark Fletcher's going almost two full rounds ahead of him. Montrell Johnson out of Florida, I'd take Nathan Carter over him. There's quite a bit of value there. So I'm taking Nathan Carter just a little bit more seriously moving forward. In terms of the wide receivers, we saw Antonio Gates enter the portal and exit the portal, so we'll see what that means. But according to the beat writers, Mondre Foster looked like the wide receiver that had the most chemistry with Aiden Childs. Again, we'll see how much that actually means. Again, we've seen like Jonathan Smith's wide receivers, you know, flash at times here and there over the last couple of years, but definitely nobody would ever confuse them with a legit option for CFF. Another name to kind of file away, so you're not surprised if he does break out later. True freshman Nick Marsh flashed a ton with the second team, and a lot of the beat writers were talking about him as if he was a guy that would probably work his way up into the first team at one point. So, like I said, probably not too much to write home about. It is Jonathan Smith's wide receivers, but we'll see. Let's go over to USC, where the quarterbacks had themselves quite a rough day. Miller Moss had a really, really tough day. Two interceptions, one of them being a pick six. Otherwise, though, he went 16 for 21 for 133 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, Jaden Maiava went 15 for 17, 172 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. The main takeaway a lot of beat writers want to talk about was how much improved this defense looks. And it really comes down to, like, clearly the quarterbacks had a rough day. Again, I think there was four interceptions thrown on the day, Miller Moss having two. It kind of boils down to the question, is the defense actually that improved, or has the offense regressed? definitely as a CFF fan, you're hoping that the defense is the one that is improving. I think it's likely a little bit of both. I think something people have to remember is that USC, despite all their faults on defense the last couple of years, one thing that they were pretty solid in was generating turnovers. So I don't think it should be a surprise that, once again, USC's defenders are very good at taking opportunities to completely stall out drives when you need them to. So that's the way to phrase that. But other than that, again, not really a ton of takeaways. Again, USC, not a ton of buzz around some of the wide receivers. I think it is a little bit notable that Zachariah Branch was out there quite a bit, but was not targeted a ton. Once again, he's just one of those guys that I think is going too high in drafts right now, but maybe I'm reading the tea leaves on that just a little bit too much. Again, he's wide receiver 27, going ahead of Josh Kelly, Jaden Higgins, Isaiah Bond, Jeremy Bernard. Like, I take every single one of those guys over Zachariah Branch right now, and probably even a few guys even further down than that. UCLA, again, kind of a hard game to get takeaways from because it was one of those games where it's a weird scoring system. There was a lot of situational football they wanted to throw out there, constantly rotating guys in and out. Offense did appear to win on the day. We got a good healthy dose of T.J. Harden and Keegan Jones at the running back position. Probably the standout receiver was Titus Makialatimalala, with Logan Loya also getting some good moments. However, it is pretty important to note that J. Michael Sturdivant, last year's leading receiver for UCLA, was out of the game with an injury. So it's pretty much impossible to tell if UCLA is going to give us a CFF-relevant wide receiver, although it should be pretty interesting because we expect this team to be pretty bad this year, and that means lots and lots of garbage time points. So that's all I got for the Big Ten. Let me throw up the Big 12 teams here, and we'll get started with that in just a second. All right, got three teams up here. Iowa State, West Virginia, TCU. I was going to throw Arizona up here, but I'll be real with y'all. Again, I don't know if it's shame on the beat reporters or there just legitimately was just nothing of really of note that happened there, but like I couldn't get any kind of takeaways. I watched the game. I read through the beat reporters' reports, and in terms of guys that stood out and everything, there just wasn't really much to take note of there. Obviously, Tet McMillan being out for right now, you're kind of hoping to see if a wide receiver stood out there. Nobody really did. So that's all there is for Arizona. Iowa State, you want to talk about a team, like I mentioned earlier, the teams that are just sitting out all their guys that seem to be important. Iowa State took that to the extreme. Rocco Beck, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, Abu Sama, all four of them were out for this game, and it gave the youngins a lot of run here. The one that stood out the most, though, clearly was true freshman Dylan Lee. He carried the ball 17 times in this game for 84 yards and a touchdown. However, Matt Campbell did say not to read too much into that. For those of us who, like me, might have jumped the gun on that and said, like, oh, that's probably their RB2 for this year already. He said that, again, because a lot of guys were out, they made it a point to get a lot of the young guys a ton of run. So reading between the lines there, you're probably expecting a guy like Jalen Jackson, the transfer from Eastern Michigan, and Carson Henson to still be involved pretty heavily later this year, with Abu Sama clearly being the number one back there. That's all for Iowa State. West Virginia, again, not really a ton to take away from. Probably the biggest thing is that, once again, you have one of these games that doesn't have any tackling. Ugh. Really hard to get takeaways from that. Garrett Green, Nico Marchial, the QB1, QB2 there for Western Michigan. Michigan, oh my goodness, West Virginia. Both had pretty roughish days. Green was 8 for 13, 79 yards. Marchial was 10 for 19 for 82 yards. Neither one of them really breaking the 100-yard mark. Apparently, it's pretty windy out there, so that kind of impacted their performance. Coach Brown also admitted that Green probably would have looked a ton better if he's actually allowed to run the ball rather than, you know, spring game environment. You get touched, you're down. Brown said that Green easily could have had 100 yards rushing on the day if he was actually allowed to run the ball. So that's great news for those of you who are Garrett Green owners right now, whether in Dynasty or in these best ball leagues right now, because sounds like they're going to... once it's time to go, they're going to let him run quite a bit, just like last year. Last Big 12 game we'll touch on here, TCU. This was more like an open practice than a game, but there was some kind of scrimmage time, and really the standout of the spring game has to be Cam Cook. Last year, a true freshman running back going into his second year this year, Imani Bailey off to the NFL, leaving a pretty big hole there at running back. They have Trey Sanders as well, but according to some of these beat writers, it sounds like Cam Cook will be the guy that you would expect to break away from the rest of the pack here. Again, on the first with the first team offense, Cam Cook was getting a ton of run, ripped off 43 yards in the first two drives, easily one of the best players in the day, also had a 25-yard touchdown run. A couple of quotes here from the Lone Star Live report here. Quote, "The buzz around rising sophomore Cam Cook during the spring has been intriguing in the wake of Imani Bailey's departure. Trey Sanders returns to the room, but has never been able to establish himself as a three-down back. After watching Cook in the spring game, it looks like he is going to be the guy for TCU," end quote. Again, just a little reminder to everybody that TCU has given us some pretty solid backs the last couple of years. Got Imani Bailey last year. Oh my goodness, I forget the running back that is now with the Saints that was the year before. Oh my goodness, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I should know it, but that's my apologies, y'all. But regardless, again, they've given us top 30 running backs really the last 2 years there. If Cameron Cook is going to be the guy, he's going to get an insane value in drafts right now. In fact, he's going undrafted in every single league so far. If you're struggling at running back, Cam Cook better be on your list of guys to just check at the end of the draft. Is Cam Cook still available? Might as well go ahead and draft him and bolster up your running back room. He is somebody that I will be adding to my running back ranks pretty quickly. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the ACC. And we'll go ahead and throw Notre Dame in here as well. Start with Louisville. We'll start with the Cards. With Penny Boone transferring, a lot of us kind of had the question next of like, all right, if Boone's gone, who gets that first carry, whether it's Donald Chaney or Maurice Turner? It looks like Maurice Turner got the first snaps at running back, although the running backs didn't really do a ton in the spring game. Tyler Shuck looked good, as he always does in the spring, in the springtime before he inevitably gets hurt, but 8 for 12, 177 yards, and 2 touchdowns, so pretty much exactly what you want. Good news for those of us who drafted Pierce Clarkson last year, hoping we got a Brom quarterback of the future. He got second team reps here. 9 for 14, 117 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. So he looked pretty solid as well. Ja'Cory Brooks and Colin Lacey did not play in this game. However, there was a standout at wide receiver and somebody we got to probably keep our eye on towards the end of drafts as well, Chris Bell. The former, I forget if he's a rising sophomore this year or a rising junior, but regardless, he played on the outside wide receiver positions and got himself 2 big-time touchdowns in this game. 1 from 80 yards, 1 from 45 yards. Again, Brooks, probably the guy with the most experience. I would still bet on him if you want to draft a outside wide receiver for Louisville. Probably still the guy that I would go with there. But Bell, again, going undrafted in most leagues right now, I'm probably going to be okay with taking a shot here or two there during those drafts. Next up, let's go to Duke. Really, the main thing to note is that Duke's offense seems way faster paced than it has in years past. Like, Manny Diaz made a really sneaky hire when he brought in Brewer, the former SMU quarterbacks coach, very much that same high pace offense there. I'm not entirely sure if this is going to bring full relevance to Malik Murphy, especially given the fact that Murphy doesn't love to run. So I doubt that this is going to make like Duke all of a sudden like a CFF factory or anything like that. But it is interesting nonetheless. Another interesting note from Duke Wire, where they stated that, quote, "Senior Jacquez Moore will likely get the lion's share of the attempts." The author, Ryan Haley, noted that during the last 2 years, SMU's running backs have combined for 31 catches and 44 catches the year before. And during the spring game, it looked like that the running backs were also going to get a ton of work in the passing game. So again, another guy there with Jaquez Moore that is most assuredly going pretty late in some of these drafts, and quite frankly, kind of bolsters up some of that end of draft running back options that you can go get for yourself if you feel like things dried up a little bit quicker than you were expecting. Again, is it a promise? No, that's why he's going as late as he is. But being smart about who you take in those later drafts or later rounds probably will end up saving you quite a bit there. Another thing to note with Duke, the offensive line looks like a mess. Only 5 players suited up at the position for this game. They don't have the depth right now. They have some guys coming in during the summer that should help them out. But for right now, that is a pretty major concern for Duke. And last but not least, for those of you wondering, Jordan Moore, the wide receiver at Duke, did score the only touchdown in the time frame for the spring game. So if that matters to you, Jordan Moore fans, there you go. Let's see, who else we got here in the ACC? We got Wake Forest. Again, not really a ton to take away. There were certainly some big performances here, like Walker Merrill, 7 catches, 99 yards, true freshman Jeremiah Melvin, 6 catches, or excuse me, Melvin. Jeremiah Melvin, 6 catches, 72 yards. Probably the biggest takeaway was Jeremiah Kiklinski, the true freshman quarterback there. He was said to be headed for a redshirt, but in my opinion, it's going to be hard to keep him down if he continues to look like this. You got 12 for 21, 209 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Just looked great in this game, but clearly the guy they want to be the quarterback here is Bachmeier. Hank Bachmeier, 39 pass attempts, completed 24 of them, 313 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. So, again, I don't know if Wake Forest is on the bounce back this year. I think it is going to be probably another rough year for them, especially since, you know, there's not a ton of optimism at the wide receiver position. Like, Taylor Morin's back for another year. Donovan Green's coming back from his ACL injury. I forget some of the other guys that are there, but like Walker Merrill was one. But for the most part, like these are guys that, again, I'll see it when I believe it when it comes to Wake Forest. All right, let's go over to Stanford because, you know, that's a classic ACC team. And we'll go ahead and clarify something. I talked about Elijah Brown on the latest DTN episode as a potential this year impact guy. Maybe that's still the case down the line, but as of right now, Ashton Daniels is your top quarterback. Quote, from what I was able to see, junior quarterback Ashton Daniels is definitely the top quarterback on the team. He looks comfortable in the offense and seems to be feeling good about his play. Elijah Brown did play with the twos, by the way, end of the quote. This is me talking again. And some with the ones, which pretty much matches the report that we got out of the spring camps. But Daniels played like the one who knew that he was the starter. A couple of guys that stood out. One, Emmett Mosley, the freshman there at Stanford, stood out, although Alec Iomanoor and Tyre Bachmeier were both out. Quote from Kevin Borba, the All-Cardinal Sports Illustrated page. Quote, Emmett Mosley was the only receiver that was consistently getting open and all the quarterbacks were trying to find him. So again, if you're in your freshman draft or something like that, probably a guy to take a late shot on moving forward. We know that this is a system that we are kind of buying into long-term for CFF purposes. Maybe we get some good stuff out of this year. For those of you who've been drafting Cedric Irvin, it is certainly was a good day for him. 2 touchdowns on the day, one with a 35-yard pass, another one was a 15-yard run. Quote, again, from Kevin Borba, it feels safe that he is the lead back and everyone behind him will be fighting for touches amongst each other. Credit to Austin Nace. He was kind of one of the first ones to really kind of plant his flag with Cedric Irvin, saying like, hey, with AJ Smith gone, this is your guy. And it looks like that's going to be the case. Irvin is very much still available in the late 20s of your drafts. Absolutely a guy, once again, that I would be looking at in those later rounds at running back. I mean, that's 3 running backs we've talked about here today that are available pretty dang late. Honestly, 4 if you count Maurice Turner. But again, Cedric Irvin, talking about like Reuben Owens, Jaquez Moore, like super, or Cam Cook as well. So that's 5 guys. Oh my goodness. Like we're just loading you guys up with running backs here that you can take at the end of your drafts right now. That could be pretty good values moving forward. Let's see who else we got here. Oh, Cal, another classic ACC team. Chandler Rogers fans, the dream's dead. Mendoza looked great, had two of the bigger plays on the day, 8-yard pass to Tobias Merriweather, also had a 60-yard pass to Tron Grizzell. It should have been a touchdown if Grizzell didn't just kind of trip over himself as he was getting to the end zone. End of the day, 7 for 10, 92 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, Chandler Rogers finished with four for 10, 29 yards and an interception. So, rough day for Rogers. Now, to be fair, Rogers fans, Rogers did look terrible in the spring games last year before going out and absolutely killing it for North Texas, and maybe that changes. But for right now, I think this is Mendoza's job moving forward. So if you're dying to draft a Cal quarterback, that's the guy I'd go after. I'm not going Cal quarterback. A couple other things. Again, starting wide receivers, it's kind of hard to tell really who's going to be that guy for Cal. 12 receivers got at least one catch in this game, which makes sense. This is a spring game, right? You want to spread the ball around to your guys, keep them from entering the portal. But it was important to note that your starting wide receiver group was made up of three guys: Tron Grizzell, Tobias Merriweather, and Mikey Matthews. All three guys that I think have pretty equal chances. Like, if there's going to be a CFF relevant wide receiver in this room, I would put like all three of those guys at like 33%. It's going to be them. So basically what I'm telling you is, we have no clue who the relevant wide receiver for Cal is going to be. It is also important to know that Jaden Ott and Jack Andrews, the tight end, did not play in this game. So, once again, that gave a little bit more love to some of the other guys than maybe they otherwise would have gotten. Last ACC team here, we'll talk about Florida State here. Really kind of the main takeaway that I think is relevant to CFF. Again, a lot of talk about the defense among the spring riders. But Jordan Smith, the Tomahawk Nation, very much was critical of the receiving core and the passing game in total for Florida State. Quote from him, "The opportunities to throw the ball down the field were few and far between. After Malik Benson, where could DJ go with the ball? I came away unimpressed with the receiving core, even if they face stiff competition," referring to the aforementioned defense, where, again, there's a ton of praise for that Florida State secondary. Speaking of Benson, as Silversmith mentioned there, Benson did get hurt on the play with a lower body injury. We kind of touched on this a little bit with CTN. And quote, once again, from Jordan Silversmith here, "Benson seemed to be the only threat downfield or a pass catcher that could create any separation. Assuming he returns to full health, whether or not Malik Benson has enough offensive skill to be a wide receiver one in a championship offense remains to be seen, but he is a dependable, consistent presence on and off the field." So, Florida State passing game might be in big trouble. Big trouble. They literally don't have anybody to throw it to. Again, you lose both Kevin Coleman and Johnny Smith to the NFL this year. Now your main option that you went and got your prize possession out of the transfer portal, Malik Benson, is out with injury. Who knows how long that'll take him to recover from? We will see. We will definitely see. All right. Last one I'll touch on this page is Notre Dame. Probably the best performance of Notre Dame quarterbacks that we've seen in quite a bit of time. Which is kind of crazy because Riley Leonard was out. So this was all backup quarterbacks here. You could tell that with these quarterbacks that Mike Denbrock's fingerprints are already all over this offense, especially with the QB run game. Specifically, we saw Kenny Minchie get a ton of work. CJ Carr had some runs as well. But by far, probably the best performing quarterback on the day was Steve Angeli, who got a 62-yard touchdown to Chris Mitchell, finished the day 17 for 25, 228 yards, and two touchdowns. Problem with Angeli is that he's pretty much a statue. Like, you got it. Like, if you're going to be Mike Denbrock's quarterback, you have to be able to throw the ball and run the ball. And Angeli's not super athletic, so I'm not sure he ever really fits this system. Obviously, I don't expect him to start this year. Riley Leonard should be the starter eventually, but something to file away for later. Unfortunately, probably the thing most people are interested with the Notre Dame Irish is the running game and looking at which running back will get a ton of work. Well, Jadarian Price is out on the day. We actually had Jabrain Payne lead the way for running backs with 10 touches for 58 yards. Jeremiah Love didn't actually get a ton of running back work, actually got more receiving work which is really, really big trouble for the people who have been drafting him, expecting that he would go ahead and break out as the top running back option for the Irish. So we'll see. True freshman Micah Gilbert also had himself a big day. 5 catches, 59 yards, 2 touchdowns. I'm still not ready to trust Notre Dame wide receivers yet, but obviously with Mike Denbrock being there, that could potentially change, but I don't think Gilbert will be that guy. I would still bet on some of the more established veterans. All right. That's pretty much all of the Power Conference spring games. We'll go ahead and switch on over here. We got ACC, Mountain West, Sun Belt spring games. Got 6 teams we'll talk about here. We'll start with the AAC. Just 2 teams out of there, Tulane and Memphis. Both of them have pretty, I don't want to say simple takeaways, but very short takeaways. The main thing with the Tulane spring game here was the quarterback competition. Kai Horton went 8 for 9, 160 yards, 1 touchdown, also 1 interception. So the 1 incompletion he had was an interception. That's pretty unfortunate. Meanwhile, Ty Thompson, 5 for 10, 89 yards, no touchdowns. There was a quote from John Summerall here saying that there will not be a starter named anytime soon. They are very different guys in their development. I wouldn't read anything into the order they went in today, which this is where I start speaking. I start interpolating here. I read that as Kai Horton is the better quarterback today. Like, it probably, if they started today, Kai Horton would be the first one out. John Summerall wants to start Ty Thompson and wants to give Ty Thompson time to develop and learn this offense and see what he looks like in the fall. I feel like Summerall thinks that Ty Thompson is the guy that he can get the most success out of should he actually be able to put all the pieces together. But that's just me speculating. Going over to Memphis, really the main takeaway here is the confirmation of Mario Anderson. Mario Anderson is your dude for Memphis this year. On the first drive, he ripped off a 43-yard catch, hammered it into the end zone, and pretty much after that, his day was done. Clearly, coaching staff wanted to save him. And according to a lot of the beat writers, they told some of their fans that you should get used to seeing Mario Anderson quite a bit this upcoming year. So obviously, do I think that he can reach, you know, Blake Watson RB3 overall ratings here? Maybe, but like, I wouldn't bet on it. But regardless, like, this is a system that has done wonders for us the last couple of years, and we know for a fact they don't really trust some of the guys behind them, like Brandon Thomas. So they actively went out of their way and recruited Mario Anderson, who was considering offers from the likes of Oklahoma, and they landed him. So that tells me that, again, they promised him a big year this year. So I'm pretty comfortable with Mario Anderson moving forward. In fact, I think I put him up a couple spots in my rankings. Yeah, I moved him probably from RB30 up to RB24. Yeah, looks like he's going to finish right there about RB24 right after Kyle Manungai. So I'm pretty confident Mario Anderson moving forward. That'll probably come to bite me later on, but for now, I'm loving it. Mount West only really have Boise State here, and that is a couple of things to take away from. Again, Ashton GNT did get hurt in this game, but before that, 5 carries, 54 yards, and a touchdown. The injury seems minor, should be ready to go by the fall. Malachi Nelson looked good, 9 for 16, 137 yards, and a touchdown. And quite frankly, it seems like Nelson's job to lose. Again, Ryan Counts with the Idaho Statesman, quote here, "It's clear that Nelson has a leg up on the competition. As spring practice comes to a close, it might already be Nelson's job to lose," which makes sense. Again, Madsen injured, did not participate fully in this game, although he did participate in pretty much everything but the actual live snaps there. So we'll see if that changes once it gets to the fall, but right now it looks like Malachi Nelson's job. And for those of you who are hoping for a clear guy that Nelson was targeting quite a bit, you're going to be disappointed. Very even across the board. Prince Strawn, 2 for 48. Chris Marshall, 3 for 35. Latrell Caples, 4 for 40. I don't really know if we're going to get a great CFF wide receiver out of this room moving forward, because again, they seem like they want to spread the ball around, and they got 3 really good options there in Strawn, Marshall, and Caples. So we'll see. Sun Belt, not really too much to take away from the first team here, Georgia Southern. still a quarterback competition between J.C. French and Indiana transfer Dexter Williams. For all that is lovely and holy, I am hoping that J.C. French wins this job. He had 178 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game. Dexter Williams was not far behind him with 171. For those of you who are wondering about receivers, I'm throwing out a new name for you. Josh Dallas, 3 catches, 69 yards, 2 touchdowns in this game. Quite frankly, y'all, again, I've been looking at the Georgia Southern receiver room. There's some value. There's value in there somewhere outside of Derwin Burgess. Given the what Caleb Hood was able to do the last couple of years, like Dalen Cobb, LV Bunkley Shelton. Now we got Josh Dallas, who seems like a guy that could be something moving forward. I don't think we're going to get a clear idea of who that's going to be until at least fall camp, if not into the season. South Alabama was another spring game that we have been able to talk about. Not too much to take away here. Again, very vanilla approach on purpose for their games, which is very unfortunate because expected starting quarterback Giovanni Lopez went 0 for 13 in this spring game. Now, I don't think that's going to make him lose the job. All of a sudden, it sounded like Bishop Davenport also was struggling a little bit in this game. And apparently, it's another pretty windy spring game, so that kind of threw some things off there. But that's pretty much it for South Alabama. None of the receivers really stood out or anything. No real good look at the running back position. Arkansas State, a little bit of stuff here from Jeff Reed at 247. Quote, the growth of Jalen Raynor from a year ago and even since the bowl game is noticeable. He is confident, has a better feel for the offense. And by better feel, he means that Raynor went 11 for 23, 217 yards and 3 touchdowns. That included a 75-yard touchdown to wide receiver Courtney Jackson. Outside of that play, though, there weren't really any wide receivers that really stood out for the most part. Again, we'll see how that goes. Arkansas State is bringing in now Timmy McClain as a quarterback, so we'll see if there's an actual competition struck up there between him and Raynor. I personally doubt it a little bit, but who knows? Who knows? That's pretty much all we got for those teams. Let's hit up this last page here. That is the MAC and CUSA teams. All right, let's take a look at some of these MAC teams here first, starting with the Buffalo Bulls here. Again, a couple of observations here from WIVB.com. Several of us were kind of throwing around Nick McMillan as a potential option for CFF leagues last year, especially when we knew that Buffalo's offense was set to pass a bit more than what we have been used to. And well, he kind of crashed and burned last year. Didn't start as a starter, fractured his shoulder, which then derailed the rest of the season. He finished the entire season with 13 catches for 180 yards and a touchdown. Just an absolute bust. But it seems like that year two transfers, man, is something we're probably going to take a look at this year in terms of guys to expect for. Looks like he is probably the focal point of this offense. Quote from McMillan himself, me going down last year, I let the locker room down. I let myself down because I was counting on having a big year last year. This year coming out, I'm trying to come for everything I was coming for last year. And he is off to a good start in this spring game. Caught 6 passes for 141 yards and 2 touchdowns. Absolutely the best player on the field that day. Coach Pete Lembo said, no doubt we're counting on him to be a guy for us, but there is still parts of his game that can continue to develop. I would be willing to take a couple of shots on Nick McMillan late. Again, you got a Maction guy, a guy that clearly is able to dominate his own defense there at Buffalo. Buffalo typically has been one of the stronger defenses in the MAC for the most part. Again, it kind of goes up and down each year for the most, you know, you guys know how the MAC can be right now, but regardless, like, there was a lot of talk between him and the spring game, spring camp, and everything like that. He is going super, super late in drafts right now. I actually doubt he's, let's see, Nick. He is, where are you, Nick? Oh, the only Nick I got is Cape Club Nick. So he's not going in drafts at all right now. So, again, if you're looking for some upside shots at wide receiver to rotate into your late round guys, Nick McMillan better be one of them moving forward. Ohio, not Ohio State, Ohio Bobcats. Originally, when I was going to talk about this team, there was going to be a battle between CJ Harris and Park Navarro, but CJ Harris has now entered the portal. So Park Navarro, for better or for worse, is your starting quarterback for Ohio. I think for the most part, those of us who have been following along with Ohio recently like the fact that Navarro ended up winning this job. Again, is he quite Curtis Rourke or Nathan Rourke before them? Doesn't seem like it yet, no. But at the same time, we know what we have in CJ Harris, and he's not even close to those guys. So we got a little bit of upside here. For those of you kind of wondering if that's the kind of thing you wonder about in your spare time, who's going to be the number one wide receiver for the Bobcats, considering the fact they lost Sam Wiggles, Miles Cross, Jacoby Jones, Tyler Fosner, and Will Kaczmarek, their two top two tight ends. They basically lost. God, I can't even imagine what percentage of their targets they lost from last year. It's just absolutely insane. But the player that multiple beat writers, I know there's multiple beat writers for Ohio, who knew? Multiple beat writers said would be a consistent name for the Bobcats to rely on at receiver moving forward is Chase Hendricks. Another guy similar to Nick McMillan, throw him into the end of your lineup at the end of drafts. I'm okay with that. Kent State, very similar deal. Tommy Ulatowski, your starting quarterback, didn't get to see a ton of the running backs. You did get to see a little bit of Ty Thomas. He looked all right. Or not Ty Thomas, Kai Thomas, the former Kansas and Minnesota running back, does have the connection with the head coach, given the fact the head coach was previously at Minnesota as the running backs coach. And Christian McKay looks like he's back from injury, scored a touchdown at the beginning of the game, almost scored another, ended with three catches, 57 yards, and a touchdown. He was on his way to 100 target season last year before he got hurt. He's probably a guy that I need to be more aggressive in ranking. I think I have him currently. Where do I got you? Rashawn, where are you? Wide receiver 58. Probably can move him up just a little bit. But even still, like that's a 100 target guy that I know for a fact is going late in drafts right now. Let's see if I can find him real quick. He is currently going as wide receiver 102 at 298. So yeah, you're looking at the 25th round. Excuse me. I couldn't do my math there for a second. Apologies for the quiet air there for a second. So yeah, like Christian McKay, a guy that's going wide receiver, like round 25. He'll probably go up a little bit. It's one of those guys I think people kind of forgot about. And now that like I'm starting to talk about him, I think the guys over CFF All Access mentioned him as well. Now some more people and Volume Pigs, I know, talked about him a little bit. Now that he's starting to kind of enter back into the mindset of people, he'll probably jump up a few spots. All right, last conference we'll hit on here, the CUSA teams. Got LA Tech, got UTEP, got Western Kentucky. We'll get to Western Kentucky last. Keep you guys on edge here. Louisiana Tech, really not much to take away here, man. Like, I joked with the guys in the CFF chat at Campus of Canton where, as I was listening to one of the spring game takeaway videos from lustonreader.com, and I was just hearing all these names, and I'm just thinking, who? Ooh. So yeah, not really too much to take away. And again, the offense has looked rough here. 9-7 was the final. One name I think that is kind of interesting is transfer from Texas State, Denario Davenport. He had a few splash plays in this game. He could be interesting given the fact that LA Tech does have a need at running back with Tyree Shelton out of eligibility. But again, for the most part, outside of that, not a whole lot of downfield passing this game. So no receivers really stood out. My personal opinion is I don't think there's a single LA Tech player you can really draft right now. We'll have to see what that offense looks like. UTEP, this team makes me laugh because the head coach talked about there being a competition between Cade McConnell, the previous year's starting quarterback, and Locklear, the quarterback or one of the backup quarterbacks from last year. And like he can say that all he wants, but to me it sounds like coach speak when you actually look at the stats of this game. So like Locklear went 7 for 13 61 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, Cade McConnell went 24 for 32 for 239 yards and three touchdowns. Did throw a pick six, so that's a pretty big black eye there on that performance. But at the same time, like, what's the difference between those two guys? One of them got 13 passes in this game, the other got 32. I'm sorry, if it's a actual quarterback competition, I would think those numbers would be, like, you know, slightly even between those two players. But, like, when one guy's getting 2.5 times more passing attempts in the spring game, I have a feeling that Cade McConnell will be your starting quarterback here. Again, we'll see if that means anything. I'm not ready to say that Cade McConnell is a quarterback I'm drafting for CFF purposes. But, again, something interesting just to note. Also, with this, again, I've been drafting a lot of Javon Jackson. The run game got pretty stifled for the most part. Again, we'll see if they can fix that by the fall. But probably something to be a little concerned about. Last team we'll touch on here, Western Kentucky. For those of you who are hoping that we are getting a clear starting quarterback coming out of this game, you're going to be disappointed. There was no clear real difference between TJ Finley or Veltkamp, at least not easily able to tell, because unfortunately in this game, no scores or stats were kept weak. What we do know did happen was TJ Finley looked pretty solid. Had a touchdown pass to Dalvin Smith, 41 yards, and Easton Messer, a 17-yard pass, which, great news for those of you who've been drafting Dalvin Smith and Easton Messer. If Finley's throwing passes or touchdown passes, those are your two guys that, like, you want him to throw to. Veltkamp also got another touchdown to Dalvin Smith. That was a 35-yard touchdown, so Smith's just going all over the place here. And last but not least here, again, we're on our third offensive coordinator in 3 years for the West Kentucky offense. We might actually be on their fourth and four. So as much as I might say, like, oh, I don't draft a running back at West Kentucky and everything like that, you know, we'll see what this offensive coordinator does this year. And it is kind of interesting to note that a running back, Elijah Young, was named the spring MVP. In addition to that, Tyron Keith, the former Bowling Green running back who transferred here, is back in the portal. I mean, Young might be something interesting to go in. Like, a watch list guy. He's a watch list guy. We'll see how West Kentucky plays their offense moving forward. Maybe Elijah Young gets a pretty good run, but Young got some really good touches in the bowl game against Old Dominion last year. So maybe he kind of picks up from there. They realize, like, hey, this is a guy we want to get some more touches to and everything because he clearly helps our offense be better. So, who knows? Wow. I cannot believe that we actually got through all of those teams in less than an hour. I thought for sure I would be sitting here at least until an hour and a half, if not an hour, 45 minutes. I guess maybe I talked too fast. Maybe you guys were sitting here having to slow down the podcast the whole time in order to keep up with everything going on. So if that is the case, I apologize to you guys. But regardless of all of that, we have come to the end of our show. Thank you guys all for listening. If you have not already, go ahead and leave the like, comment, and subscribe. If you're watching this on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you want to think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here at our regular scheduled time this upcoming Monday, where we're going to talk some draft strategy. Again, we've been doing a ton of best balls. We'll be talking about some early strategies, some late strategies. It's going to be a ton of fun. Until then, really, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed rest of the weekend. See y'all.